we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. Tom, I'm ready for warmer weather after really a very cold week. We're going to get a nice day today. Then, unfortunately, there's one more wet and cold system before we can kind of uncover everything, the plants and such.
Apparently, we may see around 70 degrees towards the end of next week.
I'm all for it. I am all for it. But again, 6 months, 6 months from now, we'll be complaining, of course, about the very hot weather. And so it goes, living in Tucson, Arizona. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. The show, midweek edition, Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. Last week was our anniversary week. It was the start of the 14th year of doing the radio program and the start of my 36th year in Tucson media. And we come to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights. We're glad they do for our studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Campus, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This radio station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source right now in Tucson for local news talk. We have worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We also have all of our podcasts. Over the past 13 years, there's a ton of content there. We've had pretty much every show we've ever done available in our archives. Our live line for our phone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health, and we are delighted she is, Dr. Victoria Mazes, Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine, which is based at the University of Arizona. Dr. Mazes is a professor of medicine and public health. She is internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine and is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system problems. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes co-hosts the podcast titled Body of Wonder with Dr. Andrew Weil. You can follow Dr. Mazes on her Twitter site at Dr. Mazes, or find her at azcim.org, which is the site for the Center for Integrative Medicine. Dr. Mazes, how are you, and how's your new year so far?
I am well, thank you, and happy new year, and I'm a little cold.
Me too. I'm telling you, I'm trying to save the vegetation out back as best I can, but man, it was the bird bath this morning was a hard freeze. So,
wow.
Yeah, we've had some really, really cold mornings. We're going to talk in our first segment about a food that I try to consume and eat, or the same thing, I guess, at least once a week, and I'm talking about salmon. I think the fundamental question, Dr. Mazes, is it good for me and good for the millions of people who do enjoy it?
So it is absolutely good for you. That's a terrific choice. The American Heart Association recommends that all of us eat two servings of fish every week. Interestingly enough, they consider a serving 3.5 ounces. I don't know about you, but usually if you go to a restaurant, you get served at least 6 ounces.
Yeah.
So maybe you're getting twice as much in that one portion as you need. But salmon is absolutely a healthy food. It is a great source of protein. It has a variety of nutrients in it. For example, it's high in magnesium and potassium, niacin, vitamin B12, vitamin A. It is a source of omega-3 fatty acids, which a lot of us don't get enough, but that's the anti-inflammatory type of food that we're always talking about in the Mediterranean diet. So yes, good choice.
However, there are, why don't we talk about the different types of salmon before we do the however and the risks that might be associated with eating salmon. What type of salmon are we talking about?
So you're right. There's a lot of different species of salmon. I usually recommend that people try to get wild sockeye salmon. The reason for the sockeye is that sockeye feeds on algae. That's actually how it gets its beautiful orange-colored flesh. And it because it feeds on algae and tiny insects, it does not bioaccumulate mercury by eating other fish. So big fish like shark, king mackerel, really big tuna fish, swordfish, these fish are carnivorous. They eat other fish, and in doing so, they bioaccumulate mercury. So if you eat a good amount of them, you know, this wouldn't be like one meal on a holiday, but if you're eating sushi, you know, four or five times a week for lunch or something, you may get too much mercury. But you're not going to get too much mercury from wild sockeye because, as I said, it doesn't feed on other fish.
How about the farm-raised salmon? It's from the Atlantic. There's some from, I had a piece at a restaurant recently that was billed as farm-raised from New Zealand, it was called, I think, King salmon. What is the difference between, the obvious difference, one's wild and one's farm, but are there different health effects with each of those?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I was in Alaska some years ago. I know you were too.
Oh, yes.
I got to go to a fishery where you could see the various kinds of salmon. And, you know, if you see photos of them, if you go online and look, you'll see that they are different sizes, different colors. They all are healthy fish, but because of their different habits, some will be picking up more of the pollutants than other when they're in the wild. So the ones that are carnivorous, if it's a really big fish, it's going to have more mercury than a small fish. Then there's farmed salmon. And I feel like sometimes people get tricked. You know, Atlantic salmon is farmed salmon. There are no it's almost extinct. So you're not going to get wild Atlantic. But doesn't wild Atlantic and wild Alaskan sound kind of similar? So you got to pay attention. Sometimes it says Atlantic salmon, like that's the good stuff. It's Alaskan salmon that's the good stuff. So when salmon is farmed, a lot of it depends on under what conditions are the fish farmed? Are they crowded? What are they feeding them? Of course, a salmon in the wild is going to swim upstream. They have this really vigorous swim they have to do to go back to where they lay their eggs. And that's partly why their muscle is so good for us, is that it's, you know, very vigorously developed by that swim in the ocean. A farm salmon is just going to kind of swim in circles. It's not going to be put to the same challenge. But what is the salmon fed? And if it's fed corn, it's going to be different than if it's feeding on other fish or algae or insects. And so this question of farm salmon is an important question. It means you have to do some additional investigating to know a little bit more about, well, you know, how are they farming it? Under what conditions? One of the places that salmon is farmed is Norway. So you'll often see Norwegian farmed salmon, and they do a pretty good job. There, some of the concern is if the wild and the farmed intermix, you know, how does that change the genetics of the species? And so people do have some concerns about these pens in the ocean that people are farming salmon in. So I wish I could say it's just a really straightforward answer, but I don't think it is.
How about taste? Do you notice quite a difference in the taste?
I have to say I do. When I eat a piece of wild salmon, it's very dense. That fish is very dense, kind of the way tuna tends to be very dense. Whereas if you get a piece of Atlantic salmon, the farm salmon, it's softer. It has a different consistency. But they both can be delicious. I mean, depending on how they're cooked, they both can be absolutely delicious.
I had a question about canned salmon. Do you still get nutrition from the canned salmon? In other words, buying canned Alaskan wild salmon in kind of the same as you would buy maybe tuna and maybe make a salmon salad sandwich or over lettuce. What about that?
That's a great question. Canned salmon is usually pink salmon, and it is a very healthy choice and much less expensive than buying a salmon fillet. So I think that if salmon is a little pricey for your budget, getting the canned pink salmon is an excellent choice.
So eating raw salmon versus cooked, is there a difference there nutritionally?
So my understanding, and I could be wrong, but my understanding is that all salmon is initially frozen, and that's because salmon can have some parasites in it. So even when you go and you see fresh salmon laid out in one of our grocery stores here in Arizona, where, of course, we're landlocked, so they're flying it in, mm-hmm. It has been initially frozen. And so I think the salmon that's used in a sushi, for example, has been flash frozen initially to prevent people from getting the parasites that could be in it. You have to be careful with raw fish. Obviously, many of us enjoy it. It's what we're usually eating when we're eating sushi, various kinds of raw fish. The people we do not recommend it to are pregnant women and people with autoimmune diseases, in case there's something that is still in the raw fish that would have been eliminated through cooking and that could potentially present a health hazard. But otherwise, most people are just fine eating raw fish.
All right. In conclusion, try to introduce to your diet, if you've not already done so, about 6 ounces at least of salmon. Would you conclude with that?
I would. I just want to say, and we could do this after the break too, there are other healthy fish besides salmon. So I'd love to bring up some of those.
And I would love to pick up on that, and we will do so after the break with Dr. Victoria Mazes. But right now, how about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. A happy new year from Steve and the team to all of the Buckmaster Show listeners. They had such a beautiful and successful holiday season, and they thank so many of you taking part and enjoying the holidays with pies and dinner rolls and, of course, Danish Kringles from Mona's. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com, open right now for lunch, open for breakfast at 6:30. And they are, again, at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Dr. Victoria Mazes. We'll talk some more about eating healthy fish right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster, the midweek edition, as we launch into getting close now to mid-January. Got a nice day on tap today, maybe up towards 70 degrees, and that is fine with me. All right, Dr. Victoria Mazes, segment two with Dr. Mazes, who appears, and we're so glad she does, monthly on our radio program. She is the executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is also a professor of medicine and public health. We've been talking about fish, which is one of the few animal foods that is consistently ranked to have health benefits, and salmon is at the top of the list for many health professionals, nutritionists, when it comes to the recommendation of fish for people. But what about Dr. Mays's other fish? What can we say generally about other fish types?
I'm so glad you asked. there are five other fish that I want to bring up that are also quite healthy and a good source of protein and of omega-3 fatty acids. The first is Atlantic herring, which could also be a pickled herring. Mackerel, now you want to avoid king mackerel, because king mackerel is a very large fish that has a lot of mercury, but Pacific mackerel can be found smoked or canned. You might also be able to find a fresh mackerel fillet in some stores that you could grill or bake. So that's another great choice. Sardines. Sardines, you know, some people wrinkle their noses. I happen to like sardines. I sometimes will make a sardine salad. If you travel, which I know you do, for example, in Spain or Italy, they sometimes serve you wonderful sardine dishes. But again, a very healthy fish. It's tiny, so very little mercury. Anchovies, you're probably not going to have a dinner of anchovies, but if you feel like putting some on your pizza or in your Caesar salad or someplace else, anchovies are also a good source of protein and omega-3. And the last one is halibut, and halibut's kind of nice for people who want a milder fish. So remember those five in addition to salmon if you want a little more variety in your diet and a bigger flavor profile.
Well, my follow-up question is a fish that you often see advertised when you sit down at a fine restaurant here in Tucson. They will say typically the special of the day is a sea bass. What is your reaction to that?
Yeah, so sea bass is an okay fish to eat some of the time, but it is a fish that sometimes can be a little high in mercury. And so I try to limit the amount of, for example, Chilean sea bass. I do think it's delicious, but it's not at the top of my choices. The other fish that I would say is a good source of protein, but not necessarily omega-3 is tilapia. Tilapia is almost all farmed. It's very inexpensive, and it is a good place to get some more protein in your diet.
And swordfish I avoid like the plague, yes, because it is just being overfished, especially off the South American coast. It's not a good choice, folks.
Right. So it also is a high mercury fish. And as you just alluded to, when we're choosing our fish, we're also thinking about sustainability. And mm-hmm. we want there to be fish for the future generations of the population to enjoy. So when we hear something is being overfished, it's probably good for us as consumers to back off and choose other fish.
Dr. Mazes, what is this I'm hearing about? We're having a dry January, and I'm not talking about the weather here. We're talking about alcoholic beverages or the lack thereof.
Yeah, it's such an interesting idea. Well, it turns out from a public health perspective that we all started drinking a bit more during the pandemic, and that can be damaging to our health. So alcohol is associated with cardiovascular disease, with damage to our liver. It raises the risk of certain kinds of cancer, especially cancers of the GI tract, like the mouth and the esophagus, the colon. It increases the risk of breast cancer. And so a number of years ago in England, where I guess they drink even more than we do, they began a public health initiative of Dry January. That started before the pandemic. It started back in 2012. So it's been going on for 12 years now. And the idea is that you cut out alcohol for a month and notice the difference it makes in your health. Now, people sort of said, well, that's nice. And, you know, it's this nice little thing to talk about, but there's no evidence it makes a difference. So sure enough, there were a group of researchers who studied cutting out alcohol for a month. They studied it in adults who were drinking, for men, 6 drinks a day, and for women, 5 drinks a day, so a considerable amount. And they found that when people cut out alcohol for 1 month, they slept better, they had more energy, they lost weight, they lowered their blood pressure, they lowered their cholesterol levels, they improved their insulin resistance, which means they basically were less susceptible to pre-diabetes or diabetes, and they reduced certain cancer-related proteins called VEGF that we can measure in the blood. So there were very positive effects from this 1 month of abstinence.
Is there a safe amount of alcoholic beverage consumption? I've seen and read conflicting reports on this. Some say a glass of wine is not going to be a big deal. Others say any amount of alcohol is an issue. Where do you stand on that?
Well, it has gone back and forth, and the current science suggests that there is some risk associated with alcohol. You know, I think there's some risk associated with driving our car, and most
yes.
of us drive a car.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're weighing risks and benefits, but I don't want to ignore the fact that there is some risk. And so, you know, one of the other things I've seen in the press this month is rather than dry January, what about damp January? The idea there is to not go cold turkey and not drink at all, but perhaps reduce the number of days you drink or reduce the number of beverages. So maybe, for example, you drink on the weekend, or maybe when you go out, you alternate between having an alcoholic drink and what they call a mocktail or a soda, you know, carbonated water. So I think that being aware, being more mindful of how much alcohol are we drinking, what's the effect on our health, do we feel better when we drink less, do we sleep better when we drink less? I mean, these are really interesting things to notice in oneself.
And wine does have certain health benefits, doesn't it, Dr. Mazes?
Yes, the deep pigments, which we call polyphenols, especially in a red wine, have antioxidants. It's a very rich source of antioxidants. Wine is typically part of the Mediterranean diet, which you and I have talked about many times as being very healthy. So I don't know that the jury's completely out whether there's a small amount of alcohol that would be beneficial. And it could also be that it's not a one-size-fits-all. We're genetically different. It may be better for one person than another. I do want to give people a suggestion, however. One of the things we're really learning is that when you drink alcohol before you go to bed, you know, the nightcap, so to speak, it may help you fall asleep faster, and maybe that's why you're doing it, but it really interferes with normal sleep architecture. So you're actually much better off having a cocktail before dinner, you know, a 5 p.m. kind of beverage, which would be completely out of your system by the time you go to sleep at 10, than having that nightcap.
You know, some of these bartenders have gotten very creative, haven't they, with some of the cocktails for the dry January, stuff that really is good for you, Dr. Mazes.
I think that's absolutely true. And things like bitters can help with digestion. And it's these days, if you're choosing not to drink, the bartenders can give you a beverage that's got soda water in it, that's got a lime, that's got, you know, an olive, whatever it might be. And nobody else really needs to know that you're electing to take the month off.
All right, Dr. Victoria Mazes, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Mazes, and we'll hope 2024 is a great year.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Victoria Mazes co-hosts the podcast Body of Wonder with Dr. Andrew Weil. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Mazes, and that's M-A-I-Z-E-S, or find her at the website for the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, and that is azcim.org. Take a break right here, midway point of the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website chavezsince67.com.
Welcome back. Bill Buckmaster here in the driver's seat on our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk a little bit about one of our great sponsors. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, everything you need for the garden, and they have such a very knowledgeable staff. If you say to the staff, you know, I'd love some plants that would survive the occasional frost, or even a hard freeze, they'll point you in the right direction. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Their sister business on site is Zocalo Village, beautiful pottery and imported items from really all over the world. Here are a couple of websites for you, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Green Things is open daily. They've been in business for 53 years. Well, Governor Hobbs, the Democratic leader in the state of Arizona, elected leader, delivered her second State of the State speech on Monday as the Arizona legislature was gaveled into session, a divided Arizona legislature. But some are saying this legislature found common ground on issues like water policy and teacher pay. Let's get the perspective as we go now on the live line up to the state capitol, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ken Bennett, who, as they say, didn't get off the bus yesterday, state senator from Legislative District 1, Senator Bennett previously served on the Prescott City Council and in the state Senate for 8 years, the last 4 years of which he was the Senate president. Senator Bennett was elected yet again in 2022 to serve in Legislative District Number 1. Senator Bennett was Arizona's 19th Secretary of State from 2009 to 2014. Senator Bennett, Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, Bill. Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with this State of the State address. Why don't we get kind of some of your overall impressions of the agenda that was laid out by the governor?
Well, I thought there were many things that she talked about that we should be able to get some bipartisan support on. I was one of two Republicans that stood when she talked about making sure that the renewal of the Prop 123, which is the additional money coming out of the state land trust, goes to increase our teacher salaries. So I stood and applauded, as did Matt Gress from the Phoenix area here. And I'm sorry that more other Republicans didn't stand, because that's a priority that we had identified a month and a half ago, where we said that when we do go to the voters of the state of Arizona this year to renew the Prop 123 for another 10 years, that we ought to dedicate all of that money to go to teacher salaries. And our calculations suggest that if we did that, we could increase teacher salaries by an average of about $4,000 per teacher, and also cover the employee-related expenses that go along with that. And according to our numbers and data, that would allow Arizona to go from being just below the national teacher salary average to just maybe a little bit above it. But so when she said that and many other things, you know, securing the border and protecting our children and taking care of, you know, getting some solutions to water, there are all kinds of things that she said that I think we can rally around.
Well, let me go back to the teacher pay, Senator Bennett. Why there were you and another Republican colleague standing? What's the objection from the Republicans who didn't stand when this was talked about?
Well, I haven't talked to any of them. They were all applauding. But Matt Gress and I, Representative Gress, who used to be Governor Ducey's budget director, and now is in the state house. So, you know, he knows the budget as well or better than anybody down here, probably. And I think all of the Republicans and Democrats were applauding, you know, increasing our teacher salaries. It just so happened that Matt and I were the only two that chose to stand and applaud. But I don't think there's a big lack of support. I know there isn't, because, as I said, the Republicans in the legislature announced about a month and a half ago that we wanted to dedicate Prop 123 to teacher salaries. And when she said that, I stood and applauded. Now, she also went on to say that, well, in addition to giving teachers our increases, we should use that money to give everyone else in the school system a raise. And I sat back down, because I think we ought to prioritize teacher salaries increases first, and then we'll try to figure out if and how much we can raise other salaries too. But I think the most important people in our education system are our teachers, and we need to get that their salaries above the national average, not just below it.
Senator Bennett, what about school vouchers? This is like a third rail up at the legislature. What are we looking at for this session?
Well, I was pleased that she did not say that, you know, we're going to just get rid of the entire program like she did last year in her State of the State address. She talked about what she thinks are some accountability measures, and we want accountability on the system, too. We think the biggest accountability of the ESA scholarships is that the parents are exercising their right to choose where their children attend school, and some money follows through a scholarship to effectuate that choice. So, she released a list of eight things. The first two, I don't have any problem with at all. The first one was keeping children safe. So, for example, I was already planning to introduce a bill this year that if a teacher or a certified person working with students in the school system is convicted of, you know, abusing or in any way harming children, and they lose their teacher certification in the public school system, we certainly should not allow that type of a person to go get on the approved tutors list and tutor ESA students. So, I mean, there's a very common sense thing that I think we should all agree on, and that was the first of her, eight things to improve the ESA program, and that is keep children safe. I agree. Second thing was to protect students with disabilities. We need to make sure that if a student is receiving an ESA scholarship that has been increased because that student has some special needs, Down syndrome or ADHD or whatever it might be, dyslexia, that the additional dollars that are allocated for that student should be used to help that student address those, you know, disabilities. But in all candor, we don't even have that requirement in the public school districts. There's a lot of school districts that receive extra state and federal money based on the special needs of students, and there's no requirement that they spend those monies on that student either. So there's lots of accountability things that I think we can do to improve the accountability of all schools, including ESA scholarships.
Let's try to work this in before the break, Senator Bennett, about the money picture. There's a huge change from last year's legislative session. Lawmakers were blessed with the largest budget surplus in state history, more than $2 billion. Now, tax collections haven't been coming in. They've been coming in, but under projection. So,
Just slightly under projections, Bill. In September, we had a little bit of a downward hiccup, and collections came in about $400 million short of projections. Now, you have to put that in perspective. That's a lot of money. But the total state budget spending this year is over $23 billion. with a B. Mm. So $400 million is a lot of money, but out of $23 billion, it's less than 2%. Mm. So I think we're going to be able to manage a 2% problem, but probably with mostly some cash flow decisions. You know, there was a lot of one-time money, as you mentioned, that was left over from some of the federal COVID monies and things like that that came into the state over the last couple of years. In hindsight, we probably shouldn't have put it all on the table and committed every dollar to be spent, because when we came up $400 million short, we are going to probably have to maybe delay some projects. But I think we can delay some projects that weren't going to be completed by the end of this, you know, June fiscal year anyway. So it's not so much denying anybody the money that, you know, was committed. We might just have to delay some projects that couldn't have been completed this year into next year anyway.
All right, State Senator Ken Bennett, stick around, please. Senator Bennett, a lot more to talk about, including water and the assured 100-year water supply in Arizona. Maybe we need to change some of those rules. We'll talk about that and more with Senator Bennett as we continue on a midweek edition Wednesday on the Buckmaster Radio Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about one of our great sponsors, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive. Great environment over there and a lot of historic buildings, Victorian architecture in Silver City. And the good news is it's only about a three-hour drive. Check out their website before you jump in the car or hop in the truck or maybe even jump on the motorcycle and head over there and bundle up, I guess, if you're doing the motorcycle, for sure. southwestnewmexico.org for everything about how to recreate in a beautiful area of the land of enchantment. Let's go back now to the state capitol. State Senator Ken Bennett, former Senate President, former Arizona Secretary of State, with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Is it time, Senator Bennett, for state lawmakers to update the 1980 Groundwater Act, which, of course, has as the key component what is called a 100-year assured water supply for five management areas, including your area from where you're from, Prescott, Arizona?
Yeah. Well, it has been updated since 1980. There have been several things done. The CAGRD, Groundwater Replenishment District legislation was done in the 90s. Water conservation legislation was updated back in the 90s. But there's always things that we can do more and better. Water will be a big issue. There's some things that have kind of highlighted, the fact that, you know, there's some companies using water in outside of those groundwater management areas, the five that you mentioned. Those cover 80%, those five groundwater management areas, AMAs, they're active management areas, they're called, covers about 80% of the state's population, but there's water being used in our rural parts of the state that are growing stuff to ship to all kinds of places around the world. And in a drought situation like we have right now, we've got some of these folks in these rural areas saying, you know, we don't have an AMA and maybe we don't want an AMA, but we'd like a little bit more local control about how much of our water is used for some of these things that maybe are not as directly benefiting Arizona or those local areas as they want to protect. So we're going to be talking about water. And even within my area up in Prescott, about half my district is in the AMA and falls under some pretty strict guidelines about how the water can be used. And then about half of my district, which is pretty much Yavapai County, is outside the AMA, and it's kind of a free-for-all out there. So, plus the Verde River, the headwaters of the Verde River kind of start on the western side of Yavapai County, but all the people on the eastern side in Cottonwood and the Verde Valley and Camp Verde, they're pretty interested in what we do on the other side of the county that can affect them. So water will be a very important discussion this year.
One of the signature pieces of the state of the state was the Democratic governor wants to expand down payment assistance and mortgage rate relief for families making 80% or less of an area's median income. Would this have some legs among Republican lawmakers?
Not until we are told where she's going to get the money to do it. because with that $400 million hiccup we talked about in the last section, we're probably needing to trim spending off of the current levels, or like I say, maybe, you know, use some cash flow management thing. Any additional new dollars is going to be pretty hard to come by this year. As you noted, the last year's budget was built primarily on a large reserve of one-time money that the state had on hand last year. Actually, it goes back 2 years. 2 years ago, the state of Arizona had about $4.5 billion.
Wow.
of one-time money left over from all of the COVID monies and federal programs of this and that. The last Ducey budget spent two of that $4.5 billion. And then the last budget spent the other $2.5 billion of the remaining. And so we kind of left ourselves with a $10 million balance when the $400 million hiccup happened in September. We're kind of scrambling to cover that. New money, and until the governor tells somebody where the funding for these, you know, buying down these lower mortgage rates and things like that would come from, it's going to be hard to get behind something until we see some details like that.
Let's talk about the Arizona Commerce Authority, a headline here in our local paper today. They're one of your colleagues in the state Senate. Jake Hoffman, a Queen Creek Republican, would like to do away with that governmental agency, the Arizona Commerce Authority. Is that a wise move?
Not in my opinion. I think the Arizona Commerce Authority has overall been very helpful and successful in bringing tens of billions of dollars of investment into Arizona over the last 10 or 15 years. And so I don't personally support getting rid of it completely, but that's kind of a leverage point that some legislators like to use. The commission is kind of coming up on its renewal, as all state agencies have to be renewed every 10 years or so, and sometimes they get another 10 years, and sometimes we have concerns and we give them two or three or four. But getting rid of it completely would not be wise, in my opinion. And fortunately, it'll come down to the three most important numbers in Arizona. That's 16, 31, and 1. To do something, you got to have there's 30 state senators, and half plus 1 is 16. Mm-hmm. There's 60 representatives in the House. You got to have half plus 1, which is 31, and then the governor. So it doesn't come down to, you know, one or two legislators want to do this or that. It comes down to building coalitions and coming up with 16, 31, and 1.
And that's what you did when you were there, certainly back your first time in the Senate as Senate president. You worked with people and tried to get coalitions. Can we see that maybe out of this session?
Oh, absolutely. We'll have to see that because the governor proved with her 143 vetoes or whatever it was, most of which were bills that, you know, only Republicans had. If you get your 16 and 31 only from Republicans, it's probably going to be vetoed. So my 4 years as Senate president back in 03, 4, 5, and 6 were the first 4 years of Janet Napolitano, a Democrat governor. Oddly and ironically, I find myself right back in the same situation 20 years later. We've got the House and the Senate narrowly controlled by Republicans, one vote majorities in each, but a Democrat governor. And so you have to work together, find bipartisan solutions. You got to compromise. You got to give and take. You got to keep what's right for the people of Arizona ahead of considerations of what's right for your party or their party or whatever. And to the extent we do that, we will find common sense, bipartisan solutions that move Arizona forward, as opposed to, paint one party in a better light than the other.
I've got about 1 minute. What is your summation? Let's kind of summarize this about where the sticking points will be and where will, again, be the common ground, Senator Bennett.
The sticking points, the budget is the most important thing we do and will do again this year. Things are kind of tight right now because we spent all of that one-time money. I think there's going to have to be some people working together to look at some of our major parts of spending, which is education and health care. Of the $23 billion we spend every year of state money, about 12 of that goes to education and about 6 of it goes to health care. Everything else is the other 6 or 7. So we might have to look at how do we reprioritize money that we do have and make sure that it's going for things that we need to help children, to help families, and look for bipartisan solutions. Because with a Republican legislature and a Democrat governor, it's going to take some working together to do just about anything.
All right. On that note, Senator Ken Bennett, always a pleasure. Good catching up with you. I hope you have a great year.
Thank you. You too, Bill.
Thank you very much. Senator Ken Bennett with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things. Zocalo Village Studios going to wrap it up for our midweek edition. Will Humble, our friend, will be talking about health care tomorrow on the program, the former Department of Health director. We'll take a look at what was in that state of the state concerning health care in the state of Arizona. That will be tomorrow on our program, along with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Until then, Bill Buckmaster, really wishing everybody well.